Cloudy and 35 downtown right now. Snow showers on radar. I'm Kurt Darling on The Level, on the go, on Twitter at 93WIBC and WIBC.com.
Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, you're listening to Garrison with your host, Craig Garrison.
Where were you then? I know right where I was. I was a young lawyer in practice. And I heard about absolutely incomprehensible events taking place right downtown in my stomping grounds. I mean, I was a deputy prosecutor in those days, and that's where I was in the middle of all that stuff. And just that fast, we're watching video live of this guy essentially dragging a man down the street in the middle of the street with a shotgun wrapped around his neck, the coat hanger. My heart ran cold. I have to tell him as I'm looking at him here, when I saw Mr. Hall, because my job in those days was homicide. So I saw more than that of that than I ever wanted to see. And I don't know that I took a full breath until it was all over with. Richard Hall is our guest today, and of course, I don't want to say commemorating, but we're going back to the events of, 40 years ago, long enough ago that we'd all like to forget it. I can't tell you how happy I am to see you, and to see how good you look. You have been a strong man to make your way through this, and that had to have been something that is stamped indelibly on your life forever. Good morning.
Morning, Greg.
Let's go back just briefly, because time is going to fly past us in a hurry here. We need a little bit of a factual backdrop. Anthony J., was involved in a business transaction with the bank by whom you were employed. Is that correct?
Well, actually, he came to our company, Meridian Mortgage, which is a mortgage banker, and he borrowed some money. And that was where it all started.
He had, as I recall, a development that he wished to pursue. Am I right there?
Yes. He had 17 acres out on the west side, Rockville and Lyndhurst. And he wanted to develop it. And he needed the money. And he was buying it on contract.
Did he present you with what you considered to be sufficient paperwork that you guys would be of a mind to loan the money to him?
Well, it's kind of interesting. We had my dad was head of the company.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And he called us together, five of us, kind of like a loan committee, and he said, "I want you guys to look at this this loan application." And actually, we rejected it. We said he doesn't have the means, and we don't think he's. And we'd heard that he'd had some disagreements with his family, and so we essentially decided against it.
At any time, did Meridian Mortgage advance funds to him at all? They have to, because we ended up with some documents here.
Actually, we advanced him $110,000. The loan was finally approved. Dad wanted to do it, so we did it.
I understand that full well. So the funds got advanced, as is the age-old problem. They got advanced, but they didn't get paid back. Give me about a thumbnail's worth before we take a short break and come back with a long segment. What happened to that loan? Why did he not pay as agreed?
Well, he didn't have the means to pay for it, although he'd had offers on the property that would have paid it.
Did you have an opportunity to speak with him yourself in advance of all this awful stuff and say, how about we sell this thing and you put some money in your pocket?
Well, actually, I wasn't that involved with him. I'd only met Kritsis maybe twice in our offices. I really wasn't a mortgage man. I was a real estate man.
Okay.
And I just sat in on the meetings because Dad requested it.
So the actual decisions there and what happened thereafter, all you know is that he was not, he didn't have the means and he didn't pay it back.
That's correct.
Now, let me just give you guys about 30 seconds and we're going to break and come back with the longer segment. I would just say from practicing in that trade for 45 years, when you don't pay, oh, duh, eventually the bank comes and wants their money back. And they seek to foreclose their security interest, which in the case of real estate is called a real estate mortgage. And that was not, it had not happened, but that was going to happen because of his default. Is that correct?
That's right. He was advised during the last year extension that at the end of that, that we were through. We wanted our money back.
Going to have to do something. Right. Richard Hall, they call our guest, a man that survived something that would kill a lesser man one way or another. It's a real pleasure to have him with us. We got a lot more to talk about. Name's Garrison doing radio. Stick around. Back to work, my friends. Dick Hall, our guest. Hall, of course, the man that survived a thing that I can tell you that as a young prosecutor, I was pretty confident he was not going to, as I watched it on national television. Great to have you with us. You're looking great. I got to say that again. You've been awfully brave and awfully strong to come back from something like that.
Thank you.
It would have a lot of folks had given up a long time before now. The book is out. Matter of fact, he's going to talk about it downstairs in the lobby at Emma's at 11:30. Kritsis and Me, Enduring 63 Hours at Gunpoint. And I see the photograph there. And, of course, there's a kind of an interesting odyssey of getting that picture in place. But I saw that picture a lot of times. And I saw it while it was going on. Okay, so you're the real estate guy. You're not the loan guy. You didn't play a card and said, okay, he's got to go. What happened with him? You remember the events right there at get-go when he shows up in the office?
Well, he made an appointment with me. My dad was out of town. And he'd planned for some time to take some kind of action, and the action was to take me hostage.
I would have voted against that if I'd have been you. He didn't approach you and say, "What do you think if I do that?"
I don't do that anymore.
Don't talk to him at all. So he comes in. What's he doing? Complaining? Does he just whip out the shotgun? What happened?
Well, it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and he was sitting in our reception area, and he had a box in his hand, about 3 foot long, and he wanted to get into the private office to talk about the plans, I guess.
He got in there. What'd he do?
Well, he shut the door, and he commented about he wanted to fix his shorts, so I turned my back, laid the plans out on a conference table, and the next thing I knew, he was holding a handgun on me.
He had two weapons.
That's correct.
Okay. And he says?
He says, "Dick, I'm going to wire a shotgun to your neck, and you get down on the ground and on your knees." And he removed my coat, and he proceeded to wire the shotgun to the back of my head.
Now, this picture reminds me that you were in a dress shirt. I guess the tie is gone. What did he do? How did he accomplish doing this? Because it's not as easy as it sounds to do this in such a way that it can't be removed.
Actually, I kind of had the same thought. It took him a little while to do it, and I thought he hadn't practiced this much. He was having a little difficulty.
His first try.
Yes. But he got it done, and... the thing I remember the most, and it's kind of the theme in the book, really, that I looked at him in the eye and I thought to myself, how can God let a man get this angry? He just had a real real angry look and almost out of control.
Well, the piece of mental illness in there, and then he may have just been no damn good too, which is always one of my votes back when. I just thought he was cut wrong from the cloth myself. You end up downstairs and outside in the middle of the street. Talk about the trip down those steps and what happened when you got outside.
Well, I got the idea that I was in some trouble when he prayed me down the stairway and by the police, and they didn't do anything. It was I thought at that time that that he was pretty much in control. And we went out on the street, and I did comment to him. It was cold, and I told him that I was cold, and he didn't. He wasn't too sympathetic to that.
Imagine that.
He had his own agenda, I guess.
Of course, he was in shirt sleeves himself. I guess he wasn't paying much attention to the temperature. So you walked, you walked westbound on Market and then out to the west side?
Well, we went out of the building and then went west on Market, then went south to Washington Street on Penn, and then went west on...
Where did he take you?
Well, he ended up at his apartment, but I didn't know where we were going.
What's going through your mind? What are you thinking at this moment? I mean, you're pretty cool talking about it now. That shotgun's already right where it's supposed to be. And did you know that he had it wired to his own hand, so if anybody pulled it away from it,
Oh, yeah, he explained that to me, and he explained the fact that he removed the safety. And he was well aware, or he made me well aware, that that was rigged to blow my head off. Mm-hmm.
Been close.
I thought about it. Even if he missed my head, I was told it would probably deafen me from the blast close.
So we walked a long ways. We went out. Did you guys make it to Lyndhurst? You went out a long ways to the west side. How far did you get?
No, there was a policeman's car sitting at Senate and Washington Street, and it was the motor was running. And he kind of commandeered it, I guess, and he had me drive him out on West Washington.
So where'd you go?
Well, it ended up that we went to his apartment, the Crestwood Village Apartments on the west side.
Mm-hmm. Conversation as you went?
It was all one-sided.
Just let him rant.
Let him rant.
Did there come a time, and well, this thing was 30-some hours, wasn't it? I mean, you and he were bound for a good while.
Actually, it was 63 hours.
Well, I got half of it right.
Right.
I remember as just a bystander and a guy sort of stuck in the middle of law enforcement at that time, all this video going on. And that means that 60 hours means we went through a couple of overnights. How did he handle you? How did he treat you inside that apartment?
Well, it varied. His moods, sometimes he'd be very angry, very hostile, almost out of control. Other times he'd be very, we seemed like buddies. We'd talk about his family and his mother, and he'd cry occasionally. I was trying to read him, but he was hard to read.
Yeah, he very emotional. And unpredictable personality type. Okay, so talk me the short way through this before I lose you. I got a couple of minutes here. Those 60-some hours get by. I know because I was watching from the outside and was involved just listening with the police officers that I knew. But they had him in their sights. They could have dropped him any time, but they were terrified of what would happen to you when he went down. How did we end up getting this thing over with?
Well, actually, WIBC was very instrumental through Fred Heckman. I credit, and my personal opinion is he had a lot to do with the solution, a favorable solution. Kritzis had many conversations with him, and he kind of championed Kritzis's cause, I guess, in a way.
Fred was an incredible and absolutely unique person as well as broadcaster. And I worked with him and around him here after I came on because he was kind of in his retirement stage at that time like I am now. I hate to think about that. But he was one of those people that had pretty good steel for nerves going through there. Do you remember seeing him, hearing him, talking to him? Do you know what he was doing?
I had some idea what he was doing. I was kind of pulling for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, anything that he does that mollifies things and gets the guy off the ledge is something that militates in your favor, because the one thing I remember we knew was a shot was not going to be the right answer, not while you were still tethered to that thing. And so all of us watching from the outside, and as I say, I was kind of partway in just because of my connection to law enforcement. I wasn't involved in the case anyway, but we all were just holding our breath because it was the sound of one hand clapping. I mean, he had all the cards at that moment. Did there come any times, and we got to go in a second here, did there come a time when you thought, well, he may be going to let me go? Or did there come a time when you thought, this is it, I'm toast?
Well, actually, I thought I was toast from the very start. Mm-hmm. And that had a lot to do. I have a lot of faith, and I kind of turned it over to God from the very instant he took me. And it didn't... It was essentially I didn't think I was going to get out of it.
Very much like a lot of combat scenes that you hear about from friends and neighbors and relatives who have been through seemingly impossible places only to find out that they kind of came out the other side. Okay, before I lose you here, tell me about the end of it. What happened?
Well, he had a news conference, and it was...
I watched that news conference, by the way.
Yes, and that was where the picture came from, and he presented a list of demands and accusations. He wanted me to read it, and I wasn't reading it as well as he wanted me to, and he grabbed it, and it was very crowded, a lot of reporters around. Fred Heckman was there, the chief of police was there, and they finally released me. We met the negotiations, gave him a $5 million note, and there was some talk of immunity, and he was granted immunity.
None of which was justiciable, all of which he didn't get. He ended up doing time, but he did it in a mental facility because I think they found him not guilty by reason of insanity.
That's correct.
We all had mixed feelings about that sniper. That's all I'll say about that part. Mm. Okay, why write this book now? We've all been through many a moon since then. What has prompted you to do this at this point?
Well, the problem is there's more than one reason, but my middle son... finally put the convinced me. He said, "Dad, I don't you have the courage to tell your story? He said, there's a lot of misrepresentation out here, and I don't want your grandkids to think you're a wimp. And why don't you tell your story?" So that and Scott here encouraged me to tell my story. Probably as a therapy. Help me get it in the back, get it passed.
I mentioned to you that you probably didn't remember, but we had met in Cracker Barrel on some occasions when you were in there having breakfast with somebody, I don't know who, but I watched you over those years and spoke to you once in a while. But I have to say that your courage was self-evident. Each time I saw you, you looked a little bit better. And I've been through a lot second person, because of working in homicide such a long time and knowing what happens to people that are injured badly, what happens to the families of those that don't make it. And I have to say, pretty stand-up guy.
Well, you're very kind, but I've often answered that question too. You'd be surprised what you can do when you have to.
Yeah, yeah. That's a heck of a punchline, and it's the truth. A lot of courage. We all wonder, you know, we all wonder. Because there's a lot of ways to get it wrong. And the steadfastness that you exhibited in that time, the steadfastness of 60 hours, is unique. You guys, anybody in the area, this book is for sale downstairs. And So is, well, he's not for sale downstairs. Whoops. But Dick Hall is going to be downstairs to answer your questions. And the more you think about it, the more you'll have. And you get anybody with some gray hair down there, and they'll be wanting to know a lot of things, more than I have time for right now, and I wish I did. God bless, my friend. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Well, thank you.
It's called Carruthers and Me, Enduring 63 Hours at Gunpoint. We'll be right back. Stick around.